very, very distinguished guest and authority in this area today as a guest, Dr. Michael Youssef. He is the founder and president of The Leading Way, an international ministry. His weekly television programs and daily radio programs are broadcast in 20 languages, seen in more than 200 countries. His blog, MichaelYoussef.com, he talks about topics ranging from religion to politics. He's authored more than 20 books. The most recent, The Greatest Lie, I'm going to ask about that. And also, he was born in Egypt. He's an authority in Egypt. He is the founding pastor of the Church of the Apostles. Dr. Youssef, sir, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Ty.
My pleasure. Our pleasure. Tell me this. Given your experience and having been born in Egypt, what is your assessment of the happenings in Egypt over the last week or so?
Well, it really looks very, very shaky and very dangerous. I have, back in 1981, 82, 83, I completed a PhD at Emory University, in which I was just speaking this week, by the way. And my study, my research, which is a book that was published called Revolt Against Modernity, The Muslim Zealots in the West, and that's back when they killed Anwar Sadat. And I went there and did the research, interviewed, talked to people. And I did the historic thing, and this Islamic movement in Egypt started in 28, it registered at 1929, and then really have been working for a long time in trying to get an opportunity to take control and bring politics, I mean, politically become in charge of the country. They've been working at it, and Mubarak constantly put them in prison, got them out of prison, and he would woo them, and then he would arrest them. And then they got really angry toward the end, and what you see on the streets of Cairo is a result of that anger of his policy. And yet, because the nature of your show, you'll be very interested in knowing that Mr. Mubarak privatized the banks. He privatized many of the companies that was nationalized by Nasser back in the 60s. The economic growth last year alone was nearly 7%, and things were taking a turn for good in terms of the economy. And he was liberating all of the red tape of the government, so that foreign investors can come in and get a tax holiday. All of that was taking place, but what you see in the streets is basically a combination of people who are genuinely, in their small number, a liberal democracy, and they want to be like the West. And, of course, behind the scenes, the Islamic Brotherhood pushing the buttons.
Tell me this. As you know, QE2, our Ben Bernanke, our Fed, injected $600 billion into our economy November the 3rd. That's caused the price of wheat, which, of course, trades in dollars, to go up dramatically, 25% in Egypt. And those folks don't make a whole lot of money. I think $2 to $5 a day is the average. Has that caused them to not be able to buy food? And is that related to these riots, do you think?
There's no question that the inflation and the price of food has played a major role among the working class and the poor class. There's no doubt about it. And yet the government still subsidizes a lot of the food, and particularly below a certain level of income, they get a card by which they can they literally pay half price for sugar and oil and all the staples. So they were constantly trying to subsidize food for the poor, and in order to avoid what exactly they ended up not able to avoid. But you're right. I mean, there were riots in the bakery stores, and people couldn't get bread, and it was a disaster. I think that really has affected Egypt because they produce wheat, but not enough for the population.
Let me ask you this, because if you listen to the mainstream news, they really demonize Mubarak. You had some good things to say. What's your assessment of Mubarak in general?
Well, you know, I lived in Egypt back in the 50s and the 60s under Nasser. And I tell this younger generation, I said, if you really know what dictatorship is all about, you should have left back then. Because you couldn't even talk to your friend in school because in case he's an informant. The government had such a very, very Marxist kind of ideology. Mubarak allowed the opposition newspapers to exist, and they were lambasting him day in and day out. They were, and I read some of them online on a regular basis. Allowed opposition parties to operate. Now, he kept the lid on the Muslim Brotherhood, and he said there will be no religious political parties. And that's what they didn't like. He also made in the last election, he insisted that 60 seats in parliament is a quota for women and women only. And that they didn't like that because in pure Islam, a woman is half of a man. If you need a man to give a witness in the court, you have to have two women, and
right.
and so on. So all these liberalization that he was trying to do and put the clamp on them, it just made them mad. And eventually they used the people's anger and frustration regarding the food and the income to take to the streets.
We're talking today to Dr. Michael Youssef. His blog is michaelyousef.com. Topics ranging from religion to politics. I would love, sir, to hear your assessment of how the President of the United States has handled this.
Well, the tragic part is that I'm almost watching as if a history repeating itself. I'm almost watching the Carter administration all over again
right.
with Iran.
That's amazing, the similarities, isn't it?
Oh, it blows my mind. And I said, how can we not learn from history? I wish whatever his policy is, I wish he just kept it quiet. I wish he didn't give speeches. I wish he didn't talk.
Me too.
But he comes in first. He's got to go now. Then he goes, sends his representative. And, of course, when he sees things, realities on the ground, Ambassador Wesner comes back and he said, man, if he goes now, you're going to have a bloodbath on your hands. So he goes back and said, okay, well, no, he can stay till September. Why in the world is the President of the United States feel obligated to make these public statements?
That's a great question.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the dangerous part because then he talks about the Muslim Brotherhood and says, well, they're moderates. How does he know they're moderates? Has he read their papers? If he read their papers, he'll realize that they said jihad is our way of life. Israel must go. And all of those policies that have been followed for the last 30 years with Sadat and Mubarak will literally go out the window, and enmity between Egypt and Israel will be restored.
And to your point, I was watching the interview, you probably saw it too, of the President of the United States before the Super Bowl, where he said there are factions of the Muslim Brotherhood that don't like us. That might be the understatement of the century. That being said, what do you think that Egypt will go the way of Iran?
It can. That is my biggest fear, you see. It can. But as a Christian believer, I'm on my knees praying that this would not happen. I mean, literally, I'm asking the Lord to supernaturally not allow that to happen, because if that happens, then you got Jordan is in jeopardy, and then the Hezbollah already took control. They put a prime minister for the first time who is a puppet of Hezbollah, and you got the noose tightened around our friend Israel, an ally, the only democracy in that sea of dictatorships.
Let me ask you this. What is the plight of Christians in Egypt at this time? And Mubarak, I understand, has protected the Christians in a large degree. What's your assessment of Christianity in Egypt right now, and where do you see it going?
Well, and having said what I believe to be the truth about Mubarak and his economic policies, I have to go back and say, look, the man is no choir boy. he's a tough player. He played a hard ball with the Christians and hard ball with the Muslims. And so, you know, every time the Christians tried to ask for liberalizing of the laws that will allow them to build churches or even renovate the ones, he would not let them have that. I mean, he did not make it easy for Muslims, for example, to convert to Christianity, and the police would arrest them. All this freedom that I would have loved to see, he did not allow it. But nonetheless, it's the devil, you know, and the Christians, of course, are living in fear right now because they know if the Muslim Brotherhood take over, they'll slit their throats, and you got 10 million Christians in Egypt right now, basically sitting there and hoping for the best and trusting God to protect them, because the government can't protect them anymore.
Let me move on here. Your latest book was called the greatest lie. Tell me a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, you know, we have this thing that has invaded the media and unfortunately invaded the church, and this is a Christian book, and I give it from a Christian, from a Bible perspective, that when Jesus made the claim that he is the only way to heaven and to the Father, that was it. I mean, basically, it's his claim. But a lot of church leaders running around and said, no, he really didn't mean that, and everybody's going to make it. And now there is a group of folks from the mainline churches in many metropolitan areas who have started this ecumenical movement of putting the Quran in the church pews, and they go at the Christoslam, and that is in itself
unbelievable.
It's so dangerous, and that's a lie, because either Jesus said the truth or he didn't, and a person can choose. You know, in Christianity, we don't kill people because they disagree with us, but in Islam, they do. We say, look, this is your decision, and we respect you and we love you regardless of what decision you make, because that's really your responsibility in the long run.
If someone wants to get to your book, or they want to buy your book, or they want to learn how to go to heaven, I mean, even Muslims can go to heaven if they convert and they get a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, right?
Exactly, they can. Yeah, and they don't have to join a church, and they don't have to do all the religious stuff. And the Christian faith is not about religion, it's not about churches, it's not about institutions. It's about a relationship with Jesus Christ. And you know what? I have preached all over the Arab world, from the Gulf and from.
Good for you.
Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Egypt and the Middle, all over the Middle East. And I, the Emir of Abu Dhabi welcomed me when I preached that several years ago. So I have no animosity with anybody, and I know there are tens of thousands of people who are Muslims, but they have come to Christ, and of course, out of fear, they cannot publicly declare their faith.
I'm coming up on a hard break here, but I would love for our listeners to know the website where they can find out more about you, buy your book, find out more about Jesus Christ. You have a website for us?
Yeah, well, Michael Youssef, YOUSSEF.com is the best way to get all of my writings, and I've been writing a lot about this. In fact, you can also view some of my appearances on CNN and Fox and CBN and all the other television stations. So, MichaelYoussef.com. It's very simple, and they can go there and get all the information, all the books they need.
Dr. Youssef, it's been an honor and a privilege. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you,
Doctor. Thank you.
Thank you,
Ty. My pleasure.